This is Talk is Cheap on KBWLP 97.3 FM, Eugene Peace Works Independent Community Radio. All right, this week, part two of the Rights of Nature lecture with Michelle Holman and others from Community Rights Lane County. They've got Measure 2373, which protects our watersheds, so that we're urging everyone to vote yes on 2373, and there's going to be a lot of opposition from the Lars Larson crowd, saying that it's going to end business as we know it. And yeah, that's exactly what we want you to do. We need you, Weyerhaeuser. You've had a 100-year run. It's time for you to stop clear cutting and go on to hemp or solar panels. So that's coming up here. But just for a few minutes, I found this. I'm in the middle of this book, American Caesar, about Douglas MacArthur by William Manchester, and I came across this passage that was just too perfect, because a lot of the theme of this show is I try to show you that they're not even following their own rules, and I'm not advocating capitalism, I say that every show, but I'm saying that they don't even follow capitalism, and people like William F. Buckley were the capitalists, and MacArthur were the capitalists, and John Wayne. And so when you hear this, you see that there's these people are fascists. They are not capitalists. And you know, my uncle and my father fought in World War II to end fascism. And so it's kind of insulting that to the military and to veterans that we've allowed our country to become a banana republic. And so speaking of banana republics, this is about his campaign in the Philippines. And they're talking about there's all kinds of tribes and people on the Philippines that I don't want to get into. So they're talking about the Balalhaps is a who were dispossessing landlords and setting up agrarian Soviets in central Luzon. MacArthur told his staff, "Tarlac marks the border between the sugar economy and the rice country. North of there, the people grow rice, and most of them own small areas of land. Did you notice how many schools there are up there? How the people dressed, looked happy, kind of prosperous. Do you see that hangdog look they have here, resentful, poorly dressed? They don't even look clean. That country north of Tarlac is a good, strong country of democracy, small landowners, opportunity for education, and what goes with it. Down here, most of this land is owned in Madrid or Chicago or some other distant place. If a man here does own a small strip of land, he has to take his cane to the sugar mill for processing. This is really absentee ownership. No pride, few schools, little participation in government. This is where they become utterly hopeless, and organizations like the Hukbalalhaps are born and get their strength. They tell me the Hucks are socialistic, that they are revolutionary, but I haven't got the heart to go after them. If I worked in those sugar fields, I'd probably be a Huck myself." So, you know, here's these key words here are Madrid and Chicago. So that's talking about Spanish imperialism and U.S. imperialism. And that's what, you know, this book is an apologist for MacArthur. He was definitely a warmonger, and I'm not advocating MacArthur, but even he could see that, gee, am I supporting multinational corporations, or am I supporting democracy here with all these lives that have died in World War II? So yeah, even they're questioning, even the military questions just blind support of multinational corporations. And one more thing to Weyerhaeuser. You know, one other thing I forgot to mention last week is, you know, we don't need to build houses there's steel. You can use recycled, steel is recycled. Most of steel is recycled. So you can use, for years, commercial property has used steel framing. And there's no need to use wood framing. Wood can be used. We should use wood for decoration purposes, basically only. It's no longer needed for a construction site. We have plenty of other building materials. Get into the 20th century, Weyerhaeuser. We will be coming for you and your clear cutting. And one other point I want to make, too, that I keep forgetting to make is, you know, it's labor. We need wages to be higher. We don't need yes, we need more housing. We don't need cheap housing, and we don't need to get rid of the urban growth boundaries. We need more money for to be paid to workers so that they can afford something other than a shack and a house that is environmentally sound and doesn't waste energy. So that's why we have regulations and rules and regulations. If you don't want rules and regulations, stop exploiting people in the environment, and you won't be getting any regulation. Believe me, anarchists, we don't want regulations. That's totally against anarchy. Okay, so May Day celebration will be tomorrow, April 26th, at the Park Blocks on 8th and Oak. Hope you'll be at that. I'll be recording a bunch of interviews there for your listening pleasure. Yeah, what else? We need a debt jubilee, I think, now. I've been hearing a lot of that, that's how bad the economy is going to get, as predicted. I said that high oil prices will get us much more renewables, and so that's the bright side that has come out of all this. And we still don't have an international force in Gaza to ensure that people get aid there, which they're not getting humanitarian aid there because we don't have an international UN force in Gaza. Iran seems to be in control, though. Michelle Holman of Community Rights Lane County and Friends, support measure 2373, boycott Washington, Sunnyside Washington Mushrooms, and check out the May Day celebration at the Park Blocks on April 26th. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends, support independent media.
So I just wanted to say, for me, it was really hard to recount those memories of being at Standing Rock. And I was writing about it last night, and it was really heavy on my spirit, because when I returned home after being at Standing Rock, I was feeling depressed. I was feeling really, my spirit was down, because even though it was beautiful to see all of that that support for the tribal nation there, and to see people from around the world coming to support this cause for respecting the rights of nature in that corner of the world, I came home feeling very powerless. I was going to share some images, but rather than doing that, I'll just tell you, there were paramilitary people there, itching to do some real damage to the people that I was there supporting. And to be there and to try to hold that space in peace and nonviolence, it was really hard. And then coming home, I didn't really know, what to do with that energy, with that hurt, but that feeling violated. And so luckily I had music, and I was working with Fish with music in Portland at the time, and I was able to produce an album, and the album that I produced was called Through the Battle Smoke, and that is my Ho-Chunk Indian name, Ksiyamani, which means walking through the battle smoke. And so with that album, I took my experiences and found a creative outlet. And so I'm gonna share one of the music videos that I made from that. And I don't want that to be the final thing you see and experience here. After that, I'd like to bring Michelle up again, and we can maybe have a little bit of a conversation if you have any questions on how you can support and what we have coming up next. I'd love to finish in a positive way, knowing that, we are here together supporting each other, supporting this cause, and that's a really beautiful thing. And I really appreciate everyone that came out tonight. It means a lot to me. So thank you very much. I'm gonna pop over here. It's gonna take me a minute.
The spirit of America. America smells like fracking when I'm rapping, 'cause my flow is on fire, fire, fire,
fire.
Through the battle smoke, I invoke traditions of old. Going to those places where legends unfold. Merciless Indian savages with a vengeance. Born with the life sentence of being a renegade. Menace to the imperial ruling class. Killers of the earth, be scourged. You do not get one word.
Kill your masters.
Up your boots and rally the troops. You know it's fucked on by the tone of the fucking song. We're here to change the dish up. In the spirit of rage, we will crush the creators of the cage.
Target crash. Oh, oh, oh.
Kunu's album, Through the Battle Smoke. It's a, there's what, 8, 9 cuts?
Yeah, and some skits in there.
It's so good. It's so good. Really, yeah. Come up here, Rob. We're just gonna open up for questions. People wanna know something about the law. It's actually not a bill, it's a law. It's gonna become law, so. If you have a question, Rob, myself, Kunu, we can answer it. If I mean, here and now, are you just so all in you don't have a damn question?
Yeah, so I think I get the spirit, the why, and I understand that this is kind of a bill to provide rights to the natural world, but I wonder if you could just share a little bit more about the details of what actually is this law, and why is this the right approach to defending the natural world?
Well, the short story is that it's legal to do harm. So we think that that's injustice, and we want to counter injustice. We want to challenge, expose, and right injustice. So through a law, if it's okay to spray chemicals from helicopters after a logging project, then what do you do about that? Myself, I live in the Coast Range. We've been fighting the aerial herbicide spraying from helicopters since the 70s. So every time we did the thing you're supposed to do, you call your representatives, or you get in contact with the regulatory agencies, or you talk to corporate heads, or you invite corporate heads to your community center like we did. They all said the same thing: it's legal. Yeah, we know it's legal, and just because it's legal doesn't make it right. So we are challenging it. We want to change the law. If this is a legal practice, which it is, we have to make it illegal. And this is what this is what the people do when the government is on its butt. We've been begging our officials to change these laws. But, you know, elected officials have their campaigns paid for by big corporations, and we have not made headway that way. We've tried all the avenues. This is what people do when it's the last ditch attempt. And we feel like this, you know, the earth's begging us to be active here. We have got to do something. So this was what we chose, the Citizens Initiative.
Yeah, and if I could just add, I think the reason why this is the right approach is the current system basically says that there's a certain amount of allowable harm, that we can pollute you this much, and then we're all allegedly okay with that, which we're not. And what this law does, it's really a principled approach. It basically says what the goals are, what the requirements are, which is that the watersheds have a right to exist and to flourish and to regenerate and have sufficient flows to keep operating the way that a healthy ecosystem can keep functioning. And that we residents have a right to clean, safe drinking water, which seems so fundamental that we shouldn't have to say it, but it does say that, and it says that clean drinking water is free of contamination from pollutants, and the same is true for the watershed. So that's really how it's written in a principled way about what we deserve, and then we can look at any harms against those goals. And so that's why we think it's a good law, and it has a lot of other things to make it work, but that's why we think it's a good approach.
So, like, what are the practical implications? Like, if somebody, you know, damages the water, then you can sue them and you can justify it?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it basically anything that's a violation would be judged against the harm, and the law, the measure that we're proposing, hoping we'll vote on and pass, would basically say that when we, if someone were to be taken to court and proven to have harmed the watershed, it's not an easy bar. You can't just do that lightly, and you have to have a real standard of evidence, and you have to also have science that shows that the actual harm occurred and that it was caused by the person who's being sued. So it's a real process, just like any other legal process. But then if you prove that, then there are damages that are assessed, and those damages are assessed proportional to the harm. So what would it take to restore the watershed to healthy? And that would be determined based on science, which is, we like science.
One of my favorite, I mentioned that there's over 670 laws like this in existence right now. One of my favorites is the Vilcabamba River in Ecuador was severely damaged by a mining operation. And the people said no. They already had their constitution was amended to ensconce in law the rights of nature. So the people said no. The river went to court. People were there with the river as the plaintiff. And the river won. And the mining company had to make it right. Big penalties, they had to clean up the mess, and it was a victory for nature and the people.
Yeah. I'd also like to read about something that happened closer to home. So just now, so Amazon is set to pay $20.5 million in settlement money to the citizens of Boardman, Oregon. There's a data center there that completely contaminated the groundwater there. And so the contamination mechanism was that the data center draws water that's high in nitrates because of, you know, where the water comes from there, but then it gets basically boiled down and concentrated, and so then these nitrates discharged into the groundwater there, so it contaminated the groundwater for all the people and the plants and the animals that live there. But if they had something like this on the books, that probably wouldn't have happened.
Right. And that is one of the talking points about this, is that those AI data centers are salivating to come to Lane County, and our laws are just not robust enough to defend ourselves. And this would be a way of disincentivizing that kind of corporate activity coming here. We don't want that here. Right now, we don't have much to do to protect ourselves, but this law would help us protect ourselves. Yeah, Rhea.
Can you talk a little bit about the dangers of aerial pesticide spraying, and also, you know, how long the lawyers that helped you draft this law, how long they've been working on these laws?
Yeah.
A little background. It's not like this is a brand new thing. This has been right. For 20 years.
Yeah, we were very fortunate to have the good people at CELDEF, the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund, help us write this law. So this is a citizen's initiative, but we had attorneys looking at it all along. And yeah, the dangers of toxic spray are many. They like to say that these are very surgical operations, and they know exactly what they're doing, and they're spraying only the areas that they say they're gonna spray. We all live downstream, and that stuff drifts, and wind patterns change. And so it's a little cavalier. I mean, it's massively cavalier to believe that you can be above a unit with waters and watersheds and rivers and people and animals living in this forest. I'm a case. I had my daughter, and then I had 7 miscarriages before I had my son. And then I had 3 more miscarriages. And my husband has Parkinson's, and he worked in the woods. He was a horse logger and a tree planter. We know of other loggers in the Mapleton area with neurodegenerative diseases. We know plenty of people in our area that, per capita, it's a high proportion of cancers in our area. So, atrazine was actually banned in the European Union. And one of the hallmarks of our law is that we employ the precautionary principle, which is the better safe than sorry. Prove to us it's safe before you get it out in the community. That's not what we do here. We are the guinea pigs. We're the people that we'll find out. So we're trying to stop harmful corporate activity. We like to say, why should big corporations have more privilege and protections to do harm in our community than we have to protect ourselves from that harm? We never consented to being sprayed. And this thing Rob talked about, parts per million, the EPA says these are standards that are safe and allowable over a lifetime. I mean, we didn't consent to have toxins put in our waters. Eugene's water comes from McKenzie. You think you folks don't get sprayed up there? If there's logging going on, they're spraying.
So what are under current law, what are the required setbacks of spraying from schools and streams?
Oh, yeah.
Do you know the...
Yeah, I think, well, I might not get this right, but I know we have some other people here who know, but
yeah.
I think it was about 50 feet, and I think with this legislation that some people will tout as being a big deal to change that, I think it got doubled to 100 feet. But when we know that these sprays can drift for 2, 3, 4 or more miles, that extra 50 feet, that's the distance between here and a little past Rio over there. That is not going to keep you safe.
Yeah, schools at 300 feet.
Okay.
No spraying within 300 feet of schools. That's current law.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Pulling from the drinking water source.
Yeah.
So you got to remember that all the small feeder streams have no protections at all.
True enough.
So yeah. That's the real problem, is that they kind of pigeonholed it into, oh, this is a salmon bearing stream, or this is like the Mackenzie River, that has 100 feet. All the others only have 15 feet, which I think is now 30 feet. And then anything that's not a stream, which is all the water running down, has no protection at all.
So it's laughable, really. And like when we do presentations, I like to show a slide of a clear cut right behind the Triangle Lake School. And I mean, it's the school where the kids would be is literally just, you know, just a short distance away. And you know, when you see that clear cut, that means they're going to spread it.
And they found water at the school. They found poisons in the water at the school. So the kids' drinking fountains had to be turned off. And they were carting in water in plastic bottles. So they got their PFAS too.
Yeah. So for those of us that want to get involved, say we want to distribute flyers or posters, or we have an opportunity for you to come speak and share this measure, what is the best, most direct way to contact you all?
Well, you can go to our website. You can sign up. You're here. So don't leave without signing up, because we will we'll let you know when and how you can get the flyers, how you can get the door hangers, how you can get the yard signs. We're just waiting for these materials to come from the printer. And so that's probably within the next week. The vote, it's May 19th. So we're ready to get going.
We'll give people these tonight. If you're committed to going to your neighborhood, we'll set you up.
Yeah, we got a bunch
of
those. Yeah, thanks. Yes, Bernadette.
I have a question about eWeb and a lot of people think that the drinking water they get from eWeb is safe, and eWeb will tell you it is. Do they test for atrazine?
I'm not sure that they test for atrazine. They do some testing. They don't do it all the time, and you know you have to continually test because we're continually being sprayed. They like to tell us that they're in compliance, and I believe them. They are in compliance with standards that are far too low. They're in compliance with standards that are basically legislated based on aerial spraying being protected. So, you know, this is kind of a madness, and I think if you're not curious and you're not questioning these practices, then you're not really doing your job, and I would say your eWeb commissioners are not doing their job. And they really were not very curious about this measure. They never contacted us. They decided that they were going to write an opposition resolution. They did it. We found out about it. We went to their meetings. Many of us in this room went to their meetings. But we did find out that the author or the main spearhead guy who wanted to get this resolution in front of the commission, one of the commissioners, his campaign was funded by Justina Timber. And he also takes PAC money from, he takes campaign money from the PAC. He's part of the PAC, the opposition PAC, which they are calling themselves Protect Our County, which we think is pretty ironic that they want to protect our county from people who want to protect our county. But, you know, they like to sanitize their names.
Good.
Yeah. You're listening to the Rights of Nature event supporting Measure 2373 that will make the Watershed Protection Act in Lane County, 2373. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends. Support independent media.
Will this have an effect on farmers thinking twice about glyphosates and anhydrous ammonia, the chemicals that go on, that bring on the blue-green algae? Do you think this will get farmers thinking maybe there's some other ways?
Well, that's our intent.
Yeah.
That is so much our intent, is if this becomes law, I don't want to say if this becomes law, when this becomes law, It's a law. You're going to have to abide by the law, so you're going to have to use different practices. If your practices are harming the watershed, you got to find something else.
Go ahead.
Got one over there, too.
Yeah, I guess it's the fox guarding the chicken coop.
Yeah.
With EWEB in particular, because they have their own lab in-house, and there's no third-party checking on that.
Mm.
And my follow-up comment would be, is the development of the Willamette River extraction of water by EWEB, is that to prepare for industrial uses for water?
You might know more about that, Zeph.
I'm curious because, you know, I don't really know of any of these projects, but water is what we've got, right?
Uh-huh.
And it's something, it's a resource that Lane County has quite a bit of, it with the Willamette, I think I can't see, with various other smaller streams. And so it makes me think that, are they really just doing this for an alternative source, which, you know, on the face value of that, it makes sense. But on another sense, it's like, maybe they know something we don't.
I'm suspicious.
For people who don't know, EWEB is currently in the early phase stage of taking water from the Willamette to supplement what they control and supply to their people, their ratepayers.
Yeah.
Was there another question?
Yeah, sure, Sean.
Yeah, I was just curious, you mentioned that the opposition is saying that this measure is too broad, and I'm just wondering what the counter is to that. That comes up in discussion, how to counter that.
It does come up all the time. This measure was written broadly by design. All the rights of nature initiatives that are in good standing right now are broad by design to provide for the greatest interpretation of reality as it shows itself. Just like our Bill of Rights is broad, just like the First Amendment is broad. It doesn't say what you can say and what you cannot say. It leaves it to the courts. Do you want to add to that,
Rob? Yeah, I totally do, because and I think I agree with everything that Michelle said, but I think we started out working on this law in 2019 before the pandemic. We ended up stopping, you know, doing the petitioning process because during the pandemic was a great time to be out with a clipboard. But we wrote a lot of the law in 2019, and one of the things we think about when it being broad is that it's both adaptable and flexible to the needs that are changing. And as we know with the climate crisis, the world is changing quickly. And in 2019, there weren't such a thing as data centers to the degree they are now. AI, there was not a ChatGPT. This AI function did not exist then. And yet, we see now our law, because of the broadness that it was written with, can be used as a tool to something that we didn't foresee then. And so I think that's really true for something that might come 5 years from now. So all of the opposition arguments come down to one thing. They basically are saying that because our law has a citizen suit provision, the fact that in addition to the county enforcing the law, that residents have a right to sue if we don't think the county's doing a good enough job. Okay, so that's everything that they're saying all has to do with the fact they think that citizens can and will sue excessively, okay? And this notion of a citizen suit provision, it's in the Clean Water Act, the Clean Air Act, the Endangered Species Act. It's in many fundamental environmental protections, and history has shown that they don't get overused. The city of Pittsburgh has a law, it's an anti-fracking law, it's been around since 2010, 16 years. And to our knowledge, there has not been a suit from citizens taking action. It also has rights of nature and protections for their watershed, and it has citizen supervision, just like ours. It seems to not have been used. When Lincoln County passed their aerial spray ban, prior to it being passed, all of the opposition was saying that there would be huge harm to businesses, huge amount of lawsuits. Didn't happen. That law was in place for 2.5 years, didn't happen. The Americans with Disability Act, when that was being proposed or introduced as legislation, In the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, the mothership of the chambers that are opposing us here, was basically saying this will be terrible for business, it will lead to a wave of lawsuits. The National Federation of Independent Businesses said this would be a disaster for small business. And yet, afterwards, the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights basically did a study and said there was no empirical evidence of any of that happening. So this is the standard playbook for any kind of opposition to any environmental law. It's going to be bad for business, it's going to lead to lawsuits, all of that is nonsense. And so you're going to hear that, it's going to be an ugly campaign, so just be prepared to tell them that that isn't going to happen. So affordable housing will not be stopped, and you know, other restoration in the watershed will not be stopped. This is just scare tactics because they don't want us to vote for this.
So it's just that the first thing I'm going to do is sue for them to stop clear cutting and stop factory farming. So is that, would that be too far to go? Because well, I mean, why are you stopping at spraying? It's clear cutting. Well, ruins the watershed.
Clear cutting and aerial spraying, those are the big ticket harms, and those are the ones that we want this law for, but not for like. You know, not for, you know, reasonable projects that are helping people in our community. That they're trying to say that, you know, that a, like they're saying that a piano teacher is going to get sued because of some landscaping. That it's that kind of nonsense. But yes, we are going after clear cutting and aerial spraying. That's why we're doing this. So yeah.
So it's not going to ruin it to go after clear cutting. Is not too far. Is not feeding into their litany.
We talk about that. We want to stop clear cutting. We think that's a harm to our climate future. I mean, when we clear cut the trees like we're doing, we're creating wildfire risk. We're creating a much less good future for our community.
Well, one other thing is the more land I own, the more responsibility I have. I'm not defending capitalism, but even in their own system, the more land, because I go down to the city council and they go for getting homeless people in these abandoned housing. And they're going, well, people can do whatever they want with their land, is their answer, that people can do whatever they want with their land. But that's not really true, even in a capitalist system. The more land you own, the more responsibility you have to the community that you're around.
Should have, yeah.
Here.
Yeah.
Well, that would be the right answer.
So there's no precedent, there's nothing in law that is already there.
No, in this law, actually is based on what is there. It's just elevating the law. It's adding to. We think that the laws and the standards are too low. We want to raise them. We think government's doing a lousy job protecting us and our resources. This is the citizens. This is we the people saying we're done. Over. It's going to change. It has to change.
Also, right now, nature is treated just as property. Yep. It is not seen as any type of entity in court. Only humans have rights and corporations have rights. So this would change that status to say, hey, we're going to represent this river as its own entity to say that you can't do whatever you want to it. Because technically right now, you can't.
Yeah, yeah. Ashley.
Oh, I just wanted to speak about our Celeste tribe out in Lincoln County, the band you talked about, the aerial spray ban.
Yeah.
Our tribe was a big part of supporting that.
Yeah.
And our tribe fought Georgia Pacific Mill in Toledo, Oregon for over 30 years. The health of our river deteriorated so bad. We were having algae blooms. Our fish populations were dying. The water wasn't safe. It wasn't safe for your kids to swim in. Our tribe went through litigation with Georgia Pacific Mill for a long time. Our county fought it for a long time. And in the end, I don't know how many years ago it was, but Georgia Pacific had to create and then upgrade continually their water treatment processing system so that the water that they were discharging into the bay and into the river wasn't as damaging as it had been for a really long time. And the point I make in this is profits don't have to be put over people. Profit and the health of our environment and our people can coexist. Georgia Pacific still makes their money. Nobody lost their jobs. They still operate, but our community is protected due to people like us that fought and went through litigation for many, many years to have laws put into place that protect our water.
One of my favorite memories of having Ernie Neamey here, he was here last month, he's a natural resource economist, and he said that in Lane County, timber used to be king. It isn't anymore. Recreation is, there are more jobs in recreation. So we have to protect our natural world. If that, we can have both. We can have an economy that's healthy, and we can have protections for nature. I think we have to wrap it up.
Yeah. So we could continue the conversations, but in tribal protocol, I'd like to bring Fish up here to close this out and share another song with us. So if you could please stand up once again. And
thank you, brother. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
This is March 8th, 2026, March 7th of Financial Times. So what this is about a shipper. This guy will, you know, he's just like out of the movies. He'll just ship anything, weapons, oil. He doesn't care as long as you pay him. He'll get those weapons and that oil out of there, no matter how many people die because of his actions or whatever, you know. And so this guy's just hilarious. And you'll hear everything that you've been hearing on the news is all included in here. So Buccaneer risking his ships and crews in Strait of Hormuz. And you'll notice we don't know whether he pays his crew members. In this day and age, people are so desperate for jobs that we're wondering, me and the Financial Times here, are wondering if he actually, the extra money that he gets to ship this stuff, does he give it to his crew or does he just send them to their death, you know, and keep the money for himself? So we're not sure about that, but you know, he has the right to do whatever he wants with the ocean and his ship. So this is Buccaneer risking his ships and crews in Strait of Hormuz. His name is George Procopio, shipping magnate, Jamie John, Malcolm Moore, and Nassos Stylianou. So Financial Times from March 8th. As Iranian missiles streaked over the Strait of Hormuz last Sunday, bringing traffic across one of the world's most vital trade routes to a near halt, one Greek billionaire was steering his ship straight into the turmoil. Dynacom Tankers, owned by 79-year-old George Procopio, has sent at least five tankers through the narrow waterway at the mouth of the Gulf since the outbreak of war with Iran on Saturday, making it one of a handful of legal operators willing to brave the journey. Most owners have paused transit until things calm down, said one shipbroker. But there are a few buccaneers willing to take the risk. There are big rewards on offer. Freight rates for tankers leaving the Gulf have more than doubled, hitting record highs. A single so-called VLCC, or Very Large Crude Carrier, tanker making the perilous voyage across the strait and on to China would earn about $500,000 in revenue per day, excluding the cost of additional war risk insurance, according to price reporting agency Argus. While the risks for the owners are money and tankers, the sailors on board are putting their lives on the line. Iran has threatened to set any ships attempting to cross the passage, quote, on fire, hitting at least nine since the conflict began, with at least three seafarers killed. All of Dynacom's vessels turned off their transponders, devices that automatically transmit a vessel's location and identity, for their passage through the strait. Ship tracking data shows Dynacom's crude tanker Athena, which was in the region before the attacks, stopped transmitting early on Saturday evening, southeast of the waterway, before reappearing the following afternoon in the Gulf. The unladen vessel, which reached Bahrain's Sitra port on Monday and departed 2 days later with a cargo of oil. Born into a wealthy family in Athens in 1946, Procopio is among the latest generation of Greek ship owners who have long dominated the maritime trade. Described by a person close to him as unassuming and a workaholic, he is rarely seen without his trademark baseball cap, drives an old Mercedes SUV, and walks around without security, a rarity among Greece's ship-owning elite. Procopio spends most of the year on his mega-yacht, the 106.5-meter Dream, currently docked on the Athenian Riviera, and his expansive property portfolio has earned him the nickname the King of Real Estate in his home country. Last year, he bought a stake in the Four Seasons Astir Palace, the luxury hotel group's only Greek property, along with the adjoining Volgmeni Marina, which primarily serves mega yachts. After buying his first ship in his mid-20s, Procopio built a huge fleet around the world, along with a reputation for taking risks. The Greek tycoon's three shipping companies have more than 150 vessels on the water, with roughly 85 more under construction, said a person familiar with the matter. He's an industry legend, and one of those people that does what we call premium business, said one shipbroker who has worked with Procopio's companies, using a euphemism for trades that are legal but carry much higher risks. Procopio's Dynacom tanker Tankers has moved tens of millions of barrels of Russian crude oil over the past year and is one of the biggest lifters of the cargo since Moscow launched its assault on Ukraine in early 2022. According to Financial Times analysis of Kepler data and ship ownership records, the billionaire stirred controversy in 2022 when, months after the outbreak of the war, he said that sanctions have never worked, although there is no suggestion he has ever breached them. Ukraine's National Agency on Corruption Prevention put Dynacom Tankers on its list of international sponsors of war for its role shipping Russian crude, accusing it of replenishing the budget of the aggressor country and financing the Russian invasion. However, in 2023, it withdrew Dynacom from the list, and in 2024 withdrew the list altogether, following pressure from its overseas partners. Procopio had always acted within the law, the shipbroker said, and had complied with price caps and other Russian crude restrictions. But he added the billionaire's willingness to shift cargo that others might not was where he's made most of his margin. The International Transport Workers Federation, which represents crew members, has mandated bonus payments for those operating around the Strait of Hormuz since Monday that are meant to enforce a doubling of both salaries and death and disability benefits. Crew members can also refuse to sail with repatriation at company's cost and compensation equal to two months' basic wage. Okay, so the government is mandating that, but are they enforcing it? We don't know. Procopio and Dynacom Tankers did not respond to a request for comment, including on whether they were making the additional payments to its crews. He represents a certain way of doing business. He represents a certain way of doing business, said Ed Finley. I'm sorry, this is just black comedy to me. I'm sorry. He represents a certain way of doing business, said Ed Finley Richardson, a shipping investor and founder of Contango Research. He's one of a cohort of 5 to 10 owners who really overshadow everyone else, not because of the size of their fleet, but also because they're willing to act boldly. Procopio has a reputation for honoring his contracts where others renege, but sending his ships through the strait while live fire continues on both sides represented a historic opportunity for the Greek billionaire, said Finley Richardson. He noted the risk of entering the Gulf with an empty ship was lower, and once there, quote, you are in the negotiating position to ask for the right price for the clear and present danger to your vessel and the crew and everything else. It's during these periods that the truly elite ship owners tend to distinguish themselves, he added, pointing to Greek tycoon Aristotle Onassis's willingness to risk German U-boat attacks in the Second World War and Norwegian magnate John Fredriksen's move to buy up contracts to ship oil by tanker during the Yom Kippur War in 1973. Charming. Is that a shipping? Do you think maybe that's a keystone in the globalization world? But please don't kill any heads of multinational corporations or shipping people. Please don't do that just because someone read an article on the radio. Summing up his approach in 2014, Procopio said, "If you are not a risk taker, you are not in shipping. If you don't want the risks, you buy U.S. bonds," which is a lot to be said for U.S. bonds right now. So, that's from Financial Times. I think that kind of sums up what's going on right now. There's a May Day celebration at the Park Blocks on 8th and Oak, April 26th. May Day celebration, April 26th. Park Blocks on 8th and Oak. Should be a hoot with all of your favorite organizations and some that you might have never heard of that you should be involved in. So that's very important to be at the May Day celebration for networking on April 26th, 2026, at the Park Blocks, 28th and Oak. And yes, oil shocks hopefully will move us closer to energy independence with rooftop solar. I'm hoping if I say it enough times, the Google algorithm will pick it up and just make it happen. For KEPW News, I'm DJ Sus D.